Without further ado, welcome back to the S3 podcast. I am Wooly in the yellow hat, and the clean cut dude is Mike Sanders. We're glad that you're here. We got some new semi fancy Amazon microphones, so hopefully these things work out. And today we are going, what are we talking about? We're talking about EV ownership and Teslas, but we're kind of going to hit it from the fact that we've had like a handful of friends and peers in this industry that have bought these things, people that are enthusiasts, people that come from other fast cars, and it ain't really panning out. So we're just going to kind of talk about that a little bit. First of all, we would like to send a shout out to Mackin Industries, which you may better know as like Raise Wheels, for example. They're not like an official podcast or official sponsor of this podcast, but they are like a partner with S3 Magazine, and we could not do this stuff without them. So just about 20 seconds ago, we figured, what the hell? We'll throw them on here and show them some love. You already know Raise Wheels are badass, and they help us make content like this. So please support those guys. They're rad. Anyway, this whole conversation kind of sparked because you sent me a text. All right, so your neighbor had an M4. A white M4. It was pretty clean. It was lightly modified. It was a good everyday vehicle. And what, about a year ago? 2 years ago? When did he buy his Tesla?
About a year ago, he was kind of getting bored with the car. And he's a cool guy. He's a car guy. Kind of a casual car guy. More of a businessman who happens to like fun, fast cars. It was a lightly modified M4. It was an automatic. That was my only knock against it. Other than that, it was a very fast, very fun, very clean and cool car. About a year ago, he went and traded it in for a Tesla Model S. I think it was the P100D. So it was one of the bad boys, one of the fast ones, basically right under the Plaid. He let me drive it too. It's stupid fast, you know, fun, cool car and everything. And he was really excited about it. He drives into the city, into Atlanta every day for work. So gas was just killing him. He needed something that was just more economical, made more sense for him. And so he was going to give the whole EV thing a try. And I wanted to see, I was always curious to see how it was. And I kind of asked him all the time, and he's like, oh yeah, it's great. Not having to pay for gas. That's cool and everything. I was outside with my kids playing baseball in the cul-de-sac just the other day, and he came out and he was like, man, I got a vent. Can I complain to you about my Tesla real quick? And I was like, oh God, yes, please do. I'm curious to see what happened. And he was like, and so he bought it slightly used. I'm trying to remember the exact numbers, but I think his is a 2019. So it's a little bit older. He bought it. He spent big money on it. I mean, I think he spent like $80,000+ on it. It really didn't have that many miles when he got it, but he was like, man, this car is starting to squeak and groan and pop, and it's making noise. And on top of that, compare it now to the Teslas that are out there, and the tech has been totally wiped out. It's basically, you know, it's not the new anymore. So it's outdated. And on top of that, it's just the car is starting to feel really old really quickly. We kind of knew that was going to happen because while Tesla has really good tech and really good batteries, they're not exactly automotive manufacturers historically. They're just not good at that kind of stuff. So he was like, I just remember his last sentence kind of stuck with me. And he basically said, in a nutshell, I have a 4-year-old car that feels old. And I was like, that sucks, man. And on top of that, he was pissed because he was kind of checking into resale value recently to see what it would take to get out of this thing. And he essentially will lose his ass because it's worth about half as much as he paid for it. So he's all around just kind of pissed about the whole thing and trying to figure out how the hell to get out from under it right now. So yeah, that's where it stands. I'm not going to call him out by name. Love my neighbor. Awesome guy. Wouldn't want to put him on blast or do anything like that. He's a cool dude. But yeah, he is not so happy with his purchase right now.
Yeah. I mean, I know some similar stories from friends. I know a guy that got, and again, these are not just, see, the reason we're doing this podcast is because we're starting to see a difference. Like, you have the people that buy Teslas that did not ever have a cool car before the Tesla. So the Tesla is the absolute coolest car they've ever had, the fastest car they've ever had, all that kind of stuff. So they're smitten with it. We're not talking about those guys. We're talking about the guys that are car enthusiasts that have had all sorts of different modified cars throughout their life and then got the Tesla because it just sparked their curiosity. I mean, I get that. Before this went all political, like, I was looking at different EVs saying, man, should I get some ownership experience? You know, this stuff is new stuff coming in. It's kind of exciting. I don't know yet. And so some of my friends went out and got it. One of them drove this thing across the country. And you know, a year, it's probably a little over a year ago when I asked him about it, I was like, hey, man, so how's the Tesla? And he was like, yo, I love it. It makes every other car feel archaic that I've ever had. You know, he still has a Lotus. He had a supercharged 350Z. Some of y'all probably know what I'm talking about. Again, I'm not going to put him on blast. But, like, he's driven a wide variety of cars. And he was like, I love the thing, man. It's absolutely great. It's so sharp, so responsive. It makes everything else feel like you're driving with a condom on, you know? And it was like, okay. But I believe he sold that car now. If he hasn't, he darn sure doesn't talk about it. And the thing is, those feelings, they, it's kind of like Coke, I would imagine. Like, it hits hard. And initially, it's awesome. It's freaking awesome. You know what I mean? And then it's like, it's not as great as I thought it was. I'm kind of having some buyer's remorse and problems. And I'm starting to realize what was actually great about the internal combustion cars and stuff like that. I got another friend I'll mention just to set this up. West Coast guy, car enthusiast, has had a lot of cool stuff. Bought a Tesla, you know, modified it as much as you can, bags, wheels, wraps, stuff like that. And seemed to enjoy the car, seemed to be a real kind of spokesperson for Tesla and EVs and innovation and that whole thing. And that's cool. I like to hear from him because he had a lot of wisdom to share from an enthusiast point of view. Anyway, he sold that car maybe 6 weeks ago or so and got a Cayman GT4, you know, and we need to have him on here. And he offered to do it just to see, hey, is there any looking back? What do you miss about the Tesla? I'm curious. He hadn't really answered that, but I know he's loving the GT4, right? Like, so the interesting thing here is that car enthusiasts that have had, you know, whatever, the funds to go and kind of explore this stuff, a lot of them are coming back. And I think we're going to see more and more of that. Again, I'm talking about the enthusiast, car enthusiast owners. I'm not talking about the regular Joe Schmoes that have never had a cool car before, because, see, they don't have the perspective. They don't know what they're missing. If your previous car sucked and it was like a crossover, or I don't know, if it was just a whatever car and then you got yourself a Tesla, of course you're going to love that. But what it seems like the Tesla is missing is a couple of things. One, you know, that engagement, man, that driver connection that we talk about, and it sounds real poetic and romantic, and you get the techie thing and the techie thing is awesome while it's the new shiny thing that you have and it's got your attention, but after a while that fades. And if the connection to the car isn't there, the love affair with it isn't there. You don't feel like keeping it. The second thing, which I'll let you talk about because you mentioned it, you know, we always compare EVs to cell phones, and it seems now that we're getting more into this that that is the way it's going to go. Your car is not worth much and it's obsolete.
Yeah, that's very, very true. And let's face it. I mean, these new EVs, they are more like traditional electronics than they are actual automobiles. And just like every computer, TV, phone, whatever other electronic you want to mention out there, because they're changing so rapidly and because of just the way electronics are and how they're not really meant to last that long from the get-go, that's kind of what's happening with these things. Is it's more like a recycle program. Instead of having a car and being like, oh dang man, I got 300,000 miles on this Tundra, it's going to be a lot like, well, this car is 5 years old now, this thing is old and outdated and it's not good anymore, I need to trade it in and get something else. And that's a real problem, especially when you consider how much, I mean, cars in general, but especially EVs cost. Like, that will be a catastrophic event if we go full EV and then realize these things only last 5, 6, 7 years, and then you got to trade in and get a new one. That's a problem that most Americans, most people in the world, flat out can't afford. I hope that's not the case, but it kind of feels like it might be. I mean, it's too early to tell, but the telltale signs are there.
Yeah, and I know, you know, before you young kids just jump up and call us boomers, man, y'all need to listen for a second, because that's not the way, whatever, the corporate world has groomed you guys, the younger guys, to think like that, dude. And that's not the way in the 90s when y'all weren't here, or when you were in diapers. Car manufacturers, they sold their reliability. They sold the fact that their cars would go 300,000-400,000 miles, that you could work on them. You know, you could wrench on these things in your own garage. Like, that was what was of value to people in the 90s. And now they've somehow groomed you guys into monthly contracts, monthly payments. And again, you guys really need to listen to Mike when he's saying these cars, EVs, are more of an electronic device than they are a machine. And that is a huge, huge difference. A machine, you can change components. You know, you can renew a machine to a certain extent. An electronic device, whether it's your EV or your computer or your stereo, or people still do stereos, like, those things shit the bed. They're done. You know what I mean? You cannot fix them. And historically with electronics, you have a huge depreciation curve that never really comes back up, right? Like, I mean, think of home stereos back in the day, man. People spent big money to have the latest and greatest home stereo. And then 3 years later, that shit was obsolete. You know what I mean? And there was something that could do more for a third of the price as that was. Computers are the same way, man. You spend a bunch of money on a new Mac now, you know, and in 4 years, your freaking apps don't work right because they didn't make the update for your computer, and the, you know, the, your computer's not worth anything. New computers are even more expensive, and you're just stuck in this situation where you're like, so I guess I just got to get a new one. And again, you guys that like to jump up and call boomer or whatever, like, you've been groomed to think that that's the way it is. That's the way they're making it, for their profit, to keep you in a monthly note for the rest of your God-given lives. I mean, these guys are trying to get you to pay extra per month for your seat heaters. Come on, you got to stand up and say no at some point.
Yeah, I mean, perfect example. Everybody's got them. Everybody loves them. Phones, cell phones. Think about what iPhone was out 6, 7, 8 years ago. And think about how outdated and archaic that phone is now. And how, if anybody has it, you're like, oh shit, you still have that thing? It's still running? Are you sure? Let's not forget about all the tricks and bullshit that a lot of these companies have played. Like, it was all conspiracy theory when we were all like, man, I feel like my phone got an update overnight, and now the battery charge doesn't last as long. Oh, that's conspiracy. Nope, it's actually true. Apple was sending out updates that were killing our batteries because they simply wanted you to buy another phone. When it's an electronic, the owner of that electronic, the owner of that software, they make money off of the software. That's what they're trying to do, and they're going to continue to do so. And it's going to be the same thing. And oh my God, can you imagine how irate people are going to be if you know, they send an over-the-air update that starts killing that super expensive lithium battery that's in the car? But you know what? We know that companies are greedy, and someone will pull that shit. Someone will do it.
Yeah, I mean, look, when your cell phone starts to crap out, you see these people with the old iPhones and stuff, and they're always like trying to find a charger. Like, that's going to be you in your car, always stopping to find a charge. Oh, I got to pull in here and charge my car. Let's just get a coffee or something. It's going to be annoying as shit. And mark my words, dude, when these batteries, see, we've had enough time with internal combustion. And I don't know if you guys, I don't know why you'd be listening to this if you don't know anything about cars, but a lot of cars share motors. So if you have a motor crap out in your Chevy, there is a wide world of junkyards out there that can replace your motor. It ain't that way with EVs. Now, maybe way down the road, it'll get to be that way. But then again, no, it won't, because you're dealing with electronics and all this stuff is going to be obsolete. It's not going to be junkyardable stuff. And you mark my words, you're going to be in a situation where your battery craps out in your six-year-old car that you spent $100,000 on that is now worth $35,000. And they're going to say you either need to spend $35,000 on a new battery made by Tesla or Ford or whoever it is, you know, the recommended warranty battery, or we have this Ching Chong Chinese battery, which is probably honestly the same company that's making the Ford or Tesla one. And we can sell you that one for $11,500 and refinance you on your car that's already 6 years old.
But it'll probably void the warranty and, you know, crappy performance, crappy battery life, well, that kind of
thing. And not to get too far off topic, because this is a rabbit hole. If you're going to make EVs work and you're a car manufacturer, it is all about getting that battery back. At least right now in the game, those minerals are very, very valuable. You need to get that battery back so that you can recycle it and put it in the next car. So the entire game is going to change. In the past, if they sold you a Ford or a Toyota, Ford or Toyota didn't care what you did with that car. It was yours. It was yours forever. Like, you know what I mean? Like, good luck. They didn't care what you did with it afterwards. But in the EV world, they're going to want to get that battery back. Like, they don't care about the car. The car is just what's carrying the battery around. The battery is kind of the value here. And and they're going to need to get that back, which means this is going to turn into a cell phone type of situation where they want to lease you the car, get you in a monthly payment that includes the car or whatever, and then you just turn it in every, you know, 36 months or whatever it is for the new one.
You're 100% right. I mean, they call the stuff, the materials used to make these batteries are called rare materials and rare minerals for a reason, because there's not enough of them. We literally cannot mine them fast enough. I mean, and that's with only EVs being what, 5-6% of the total market of cars, and the factories making the batteries and the mining operations, mining for the lithium and everything else needed, flat out can't keep up. Now, I understand that they're ramping up, but ramping up an industrial arena as fast as what we're talking about is not really a plausible thing. It's not really real. So this whole idea of 2030, 2035, I think is 100% pipe dream. But because it's rare, they're hard to find and it's hard to get out of the earth. And some of them, I think like lithium is actual like poisonous. We got a lot of big problems here. It all screws up the bottom line when it comes to price, because it's very expensive to do. And on top of that, you just can't make that many of them, you know, and that's not going to work with this whole idea of treating the car like a cell phone. You know, like it would work if people bought an EV and you could hold onto that car the same way you would like a Toyota 4Runner, where you say, this is a good, reliable car, and I'm literally just going to have this thing for the next 300,000 miles, which is going to be 15 to 20 years, and I'm just going to drive this car. But if our theory is correct, and it's more like 5 to 8 years per car, dude, we can't sustain that. The market can't hold up with that.
Yeah. Like, just to kind of whatever, go back over that. Like, in the past, Ford, GM, Dodge, Toyota, Honda, they're not competing for engine parts. Like, there's not a competition for that. They're competing for the best engine. That is different. Now they're competing for parts, and the parts are rare earth minerals. So, in order to beat the competition, you have to hold on. You got to have the most of them. You know what I mean? You have to have the most of that stuff. And now they are introducing cheaper batteries, which they're trying to market as more efficient. You know, they're changing the words or whatever. It's a cheaper battery. It's less dense. It uses less rare earth minerals, but it's not going to get you as far. It's not going to make as much power. So I think it does charge quicker, but that's another thing customers need to really pay attention to if you're looking for EVs. Like, don't think that the 2023 Mach-E is the same as the 2022. It might look the same on the outside, but have much cheaper parts on the inside to try and find more profit margin because they're losing their ass on those cars. So yeah, I just wanted to, whatever, just wanted to add that in there. I'm trying to think, is there anything else we need to say?
No, I knew that this was going to be a quick topic. You know, again, it all spawned off of just a quick little conversation I had with my neighbor. But I thought it was interesting, you know, because everything we hear, it's all hearsay. It's all on the internet and just kind of going off of what people say. And a lot of times it's inflammatory and it's blown out of proportion. But this was straight out of the horse's mouth from a friend of mine, a neighbor, a buddy who has firsthand experience with this. And I was interested to see that it had kind of gone the way that I was afraid it was going to.
Yeah. And again, you're going to get your most real, authentic information and reviews from car enthusiasts, from people that have had other interesting cars in their life. And this, the reason we're mentioning this is because there's enough to be a trend in the data now. We're seeing the guys that jumped out and bought it to kind of, you know, get the ownership experience are going, hey, it ain't great. I enjoy not buying gas, but I'm missing my old car. I'm not enjoying the resale value. And the car in Tesla's case, kind of built like IKEA furniture, it sounds like. So.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, theoretically, you would think that the legacy automakers would kind of fix that because they're more of car makers than Tesla is. But Tesla has kind of had the battery tech and the motor tech and everything. So we'll see if that ever does balance out. But right now, it's still all a guessing game. You know, we got companies like Toyota popping out and saying, oh, we bought a Tesla and we were just amazed at how it was engineered. And it was we need to engineer a platform specifically for an EV instead of shoving EV components into an internal combustion engine platform. Well, now are we talking about taking away the big positive that the legacy automakers had when it came to making good cars? Are they now going to start trying to just make cars like Tesla? And if they do, are they going to fall apart at the same rate that Teslas do? I don't know. Everything's up in the air right now. We don't know.
Yeah. And to go into that Tesla article, Toyota dissected a Tesla and they were, you know, open about it. And they were like, wow, there are some things into this car that are almost alien, you know, like just we've never seen anything like this, the way that they construct certain pieces and eliminate like components. Now, I'm not just talking about engine components. I'm talking about bracketry and stuff like that is all like molded and formed into this weird construction, you know, engineering process and everything. And that's cool. Like that is neat that he's doing that. But the trade-off is when you have a problem, it's a big problem because every part of the car is substantial. If you have a fender bender, it's a freaking problem. And then I don't even want to go into what insurance rates are going to do when we all go into EVs and these cars just kind of, you know, drive themselves to a junkyard if they get in a fender bender because they've decided they're not going to, you know, they're not equipped for the road anymore. I think when people say EV is the future, like you need to pay attention to who's saying it because it always seems to be the people that are trying to sell you something. The government and the car manufacturers. Car manufacturers have realized that once they sort out the mess, there's a lot more profit in an EV than an internal combustion car. Now, that profit is not going to be passed down to you guys. It's going to go to them. And they're sorry, it's pollen season in Georgia. They're going to figure out how to get you, you know, 5-6 year payments isn't enough anymore, man. They're going to get you into that rotation where you just stay and afford payment. Just like we do with phones. If you're an iPhone user, you're going to get an iPhone for your next phone. If you're an Android, like, you know, people don't switch. They just go in there, turn them in, get their next phone, keep paying their however much it is a month. Anyway, I guess we've kind of beat this down now. Anything else?
The only thing that popped into my head is it was funny. You were saying, you know, pay attention to who was actually saying what. And it is really important to listen to the people who are more car savvy than the people who are tech savvy when it comes to this kind of stuff. Because at the end of the day, we want a car. not necessarily just a piece of tech. First and foremost, the car has to be a car. The tech is kind of the bonus, the add-on. And it's true because you see other industries doing this too. Major League Baseball right now is going through all these ridiculous, stupid rule changes to make the game of baseball shorter and faster, all because people who don't watch baseball complain that baseball takes too long to finish a game and it's boring. So people who will never be appeased and will never watch or like baseball are the ones who are complaining and making MLB change the rules. And it kind of feels like the same thing here with the automotive industry too. Listen to the people. What?
Because it is. Because they're building cars for investors. Because they're building cars for stockholders and for people that don't like cars. Why would you? You know what I mean? Like, you don't make a fine bourbon for people that don't drink. You know what I mean? Like, come on, man. I think the automotive industry just needs to slowly pull their heads out of their asses and pretend, you know, some of this never happened. They've gone a little too stupid. Again, not that we should not pursue it. I think a lot of people's perception of EVs, I know I'm one of them, 2 years ago was very open. 2 years later, when it's being forced down your damn throat, you tend to resist it. I think one of the biggest obstacles for the whole EV movement right now is the fact that it's being forced. Just let it enter the marketplace. Mm-hmm. Let it shake out. I think we're going to have a fun time watching it shake out for the next 10 years. I think we're going to see a lot of people lose their ass and complain. But you know what? I mean, that's the responsibility of the customer. You got to be an informed customer, which a lot of people are not. They're just repeating that this is the future because the powers that be told them that it's the future, and the powers that be told them it's green. And so whatever, that, you know, they'll reap what they sow.
Yeah, it's funny. Historically, all my friends and family kind of come to me. In fact, my wife's uncle literally was just texting me last night about a car he was thinking about going to buy. And they tell me make and model and mileage and send me some pictures. Should I buy this? What's the problems with it? And typically I can give a pretty informed answer because I know a decent bit about a lot of cars. I can at least give some solid input on whether or not it's a sound purchase and what kind of stuff you're going to be facing when you buy it. When people come to me and ask what kind of EV they should buy, it's just different. Again, it's not a machine. It's not a mechanical thing. And we don't have any history on these things. So, like, I know I said this a long time ago, but I wouldn't touch these first gen EVs. I guess if I had to get into an EV right now, it would be a Tesla, just because they've been doing it for so much longer than everybody else. But like, I will not be the guinea pig for a type of investment that's this large that can go as bad as this possibly can. I just wouldn't do it. So don't ask me for advice when it comes to buying.
I mean, it's gonna go so bad. It's gonna go so bad that it could crush an economy. Again, you know what I mean? But like, when we get to the point where these cars that they kind of force on us get to be 8 years old and they all start taking shits and people still owe 50 grand on them because they're in stupid 8 to 10 year loans on these things, it's gonna come down. They're gonna walk away from these loans. It's just bad news. And I'm just really glad that I know how to turn a wrench. That is a skill that is not that prevalent anymore. And I'm glad that I have it because I don't have to play this game.
Dude, do you have any idea between the two of us how many tens of thousands of dollars you and I have saved ourselves just by doing work on our own vehicles?
Basic shit.
Because it's easy to do.
That's what we ought to do. That's what we ought to do with this whole damn little, you know, business is start teaching kids how to work on cars again. Here is a tire. Here's a lug wrench, you know, like, here's how you do this. You can maintain these cars, and you're probably going to need to. But whatever. All right. With that, what else? Subscribe to our app, please, if you don't already. It's freaking free. Can't make it any freer. You can get it on Apple. You can get it on Android. We also have these totally sick stickers we just made, and other stuff's coming. Still Hood, we're bringing that back. That's something we've done for, what, 15 years now or something like that. So anyway, yeah, get the app. Okay.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
All right. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the S3 Magazine Podcast. I am Wooly, and that dude over there in the Never Lift shirt is Mike Sanders. And today, we're going to talk about some idea that Mike just hit me with. We hadn't, like, rehearsed any of this, not that we ever do, but he was getting all frustrated today and texting me this idea. And basically, the topic is COVID. The excuse is no longer freaking valid, yet the damage is done. It has changed our world. It has changed our country. It has changed our work ethic. And specifically regarding S3, it's changed the automotive industry a lot. Will we ever get back to normal, what normal was before this pandemic? I'm assuming something sparked this. What grinded your gears today and made you get all pissy about that?
Have you noticed that just everywhere you go now, whether it's to go get a burrito or to go to a hotel or whatever you're doing on a day-to-day basis, whenever you're going to give money to a business, that it is always, always the B squad working nowadays? Like, the A squad doesn't exist anymore. You used to be like, man, hopefully I get the A squad. Sometimes you get the B. Now, like, it's best case scenario, you still get the shitbirds. And then you get the absolute morons after that. And it's just because our workforce has just been decimated. And it's all because of COVID. Because when COVID happened, half the freaking workforce left, more than half. They went and they all started working from home. A lot of people were just straight up out of a job. They found other things to do. They didn't come back to the workforce. Stuff got delayed. And it was just always the excuse. A lot of you guys may not know this. I work another job. I'm a national sales manager for a machinery company. And so I deal with a lot of importing and exporting of containers and stuff coming over and machines being built and other countries. I do a lot of stuff like that. Okay. So it was just the common excuse. You knew that every time you asked, hey, man, what's the status of this machine? What's the status of this order? When is this container going to be here? It was just the constant kicking the can down the road of, COVID, which basically meant, I don't know. Stop asking me. It's a month later than what you think it's going to be. So I'm not even going to tell you the answer. And that was acceptable during COVID. It's not freaking acceptable anymore. All right. Everybody has, quote unquote, gone back to work. They really haven't. And the people that have are just not freaking working very hard. Like, it is impossible to get good help nowadays. People are just making stupid mistakes constantly. Everything is delayed. Everything is more expensive. Every freaking freight shipment I send is damaged because some moron with a forklift is destroying it. The automotive industry is totally fucked, you know, and they do it all. Let's get into the political side of it, too. On top of everything being late and just screwed up, we've just been, as a society, used to having a boot on our neck now. But it's okay. Stay at home. We'll give you some money. And in the process, we're going to take away all your rights and tell you what you can and can't do anymore. It's for your own safety. Well, that cat's out of the bag. That's not going to go back in anytime soon. That's just the way life is now because COVID lasted for so damn long. We've all got this crap mentality that it is the way that it is now. And that sucks because it's really, really freaking hard to get any work done nowadays. And it shouldn't be like that. Life should be back to normal. We should be pumping and churning along again. And we're just not. So what got up my ass today about this is just a bunch of people kind of trying to still use that COVID excuse as to why they were not doing their job and getting things done and moving along the way that they should or the way that I think that they should and just still making mistakes. And it was typical of, meh, yeah, it's just this is what happens, man. It's COVID. That excuse, in my opinion, is done. It's over. You know, COVID is still a thing. I get that. But it's not really a thing anymore. Can we all agree on that? It's not really this life-changing, life or death, terrifying thing anymore. It's time to go back to work, everyone. It's time to not just go back to work, but become good at something again. Like, God damn it. I swear, I don't know if it's just a new breed of people in the workforce or if everybody went home and forgot how to use their brains and their hands and came back and they're like, shit, what are these things? And nothing works anymore. Holy crap. I feel like I'm droning on. You talk about it a little bit, man.
I mean, I'm just going off the cuff, but I feel like it broke, COVID broke the rhythm of what was acceptable and what was not acceptable. There was a way that the world worked, and that's just the way it was. And if you weren't capable, you kind of just got left. You know what I mean? And that we didn't take fucking excuses. You know what I mean? Like, that's not the way the world worked. But this is kind of the equivalent of, like, a class bombs a test, so the teacher goes, it's okay. It's okay. We'll just go ahead and put, we won't count that one. And then that happens a couple of times, and pretty soon it's almost like a case study, like a psychological study, like how it changes mentalities and how quickly the capable performers in this country and in this world will stoop down to the level of the incapable. We kind of, it was like a whole lowering of the bar thing. And I remember you and me talking about this very, very early in COVID, like, where is this going to go? Like, how long can we not work? This isn't going to last for long. At some point, the capable people are going to have to go out and take the risk that we can't have a world stop. But we did have that. We had the world stop. And it was the death of our print magazine. Through all the shit that we fought with S3 print and overcame and struggled through, it was ultimately our printer that put us out of business. Like, the irony there is ridiculous. And the reason it happened is because our particular printer, there was no fight in him. He didn't fight. I got another point I'll make after this. Like, it was very much like, hey, guys, we need to get out ahead of this because there's no paper and your costs are going to be a lot more and you're going to have to buy paper for probably multiple issues at a time. Well, we can't freaking do that. And that leads to my second point. Before COVID, there was still a thing where the customer was always right and where businesses worked for the customer. And all that's changed now. You're talking about the B team, man. You don't have to go far. Just go to your local freaking Chipotle and you will notice very quickly that it's not about the customer anymore. Look at Disney. Like, they are not catering to their customer. Disney was always expensive, but like, they went above and beyond in what they delivered, right? And now it's just like, hey, you're lucky to be able to come here. Here's our rules. And, you know, don't really bother us. Just give us your fucking money and don't talk to us. And everything's online now. And yeah, you know, and then they get their little hair wet. You know, it's just, the whole world has lost its damn marbles, dude. And I think that there's certain things that they're trying to push through as part of COVID. What's up?
I just noticed that my nephew was here over the weekend and his toys and shit are just everywhere. And I just kind of saw him on my camera. Keep going.
It's a bad life. I feel like there's other things they're trying to push through, which might be off topic. You know, but like this whole cashless society and stuff like that, it's all kind of, they're using COVID. Oh, you know, well, there's a coin shortage. What the fuck? No, there's not. No, there's not. And then they're like, well, you know, it's not sanitary to exchange money. Yeah, it is. And it's the best way to do business. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I use the Chipotle stupid ass reference because I went into a Chipotle, which, you know, I love. like that's my jam, you know, like that kind of a place. And went in there and ordered something. And they were like, we're not taking cash. And I was like, all right, well, I don't use cards. You know, and they're like, like, you don't have a card that you could use? And I was like, nope, I use cash, which is backed by the fucking government. You know what I mean? And they were just like, I guess here you go. Just take it. I'm like, are you freaking serious? Like, it's like you said, the excuse ain't working anymore. Like, we need to get back to some human interaction here. It's making a generation that was already weirder, to be honest. It's fucking up our kids because our kids are kind of that COVID generation kids, man. Like, my daughter's 9, so for a significant part of her life now, she's dealt with it. she sees humans as a threat to her health in a way. I mean, she doesn't because we don't raise her like that. But there's a lot of, you go into Metro Atlanta and there are a lot of people that do, you know, distance yourself from people. That ain't healthy. And we're gonna pay the price for this after me and you are gone if we don't nip it in the bud now. You know what I mean? Like you just can't, when we have technology coming in the way that it is and kind of wrecking natural social, you know, interactions and stuff like that, we already have a problem. We're already becoming too attached to a screen and not conversing with each other. You know what I mean? You see it all the time. You go to a restaurant, whole family's on tablets. I'm guilty of that kind of stuff. So when you add the threat of health to that, man, it's going to make people freaking weird, you know, and not to mention the political tinfoil, whatever conspiracy theory, which, by the way, all these theories are turning out to be pretty damn legit. Like, it's taught nations how to control people for your safety. And when people go, our safety, yeah, we better listen, we better comply. All it takes is one, you know, dick to use that for bad. You know what I mean? Like, you can control a nation. I mean, literally, we gave you the playbook on how to control an entire freaking world and get them to do what you say. I think that this nation needs to kind of find their balls a little bit and not be so scared of everything that they tell us to be scared of, because it's always freaking something.
Yeah, what's that old saying? Idle hands are the devil's playthings or something like that. I don't know. It seems fitting here because I feel like when everybody got sent home, when COVID officially became the big new scary thing, everybody got sent home and the people in charge who had all the power had a lot of time to sit there and figure out how to deal with this and how to fix it. And obviously they didn't. So they spent all that time figuring out how they could take advantage of it. And now you got media companies that have figured out that, well, our best way to get views and control people is the same thing. So it's great. It's fear. It's fear. Scare the hell out of them to get them to click, 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 so we can get all that ad money. And you can control them all at the same time. At the same time, all the extremely rich people figured out how to get more rich off of this, because we're sitting at home just being happy to collect a little bit of stimulus checks so we can keep paying our rent and keep going. And they're just figuring out, I'm like, it's the most ridiculous shit ever. There's a reason that all these get rich quick schemes worked so well from when the pandemic started until now. Let me just give you guys a hint. If you see an influencer like pumping something up and telling you how great it's going to be and how rare it is and how it's a once in a lifetime opportunity, dude, that is a penny stock sales pitch if I've ever heard it in my life. What they're selling you is worthless unless you buy it, okay? They're going to use your money. They're going to get rich off of it, and they're going to go, oh, dang, it didn't work. Don't mind if you know, just fuck off. Sorry about that. We'll get you next time. Don't forget to like and subscribe to my YouTube channel. It's all the same bullshit. And by the way, that's what's replaced good traditional, you know, independent journalism and media, is that type of crap right there. There are certain people I have in mind when I'm saying this. I'm not going to name any names. If you guys pay attention to social media, you probably know some of the people I'm talking about. But they did that type of crap, and those people got insanely wealthy because they figured out, on top of getting all this ad revenue, how can we get really, really, really rich? We'll do it the same way that the OnlyFans chicks do. We'll just get a little bit of money from a lot of people. We'll talk about something like Bitcoin and crypto that's so far over everybody's head and doesn't make any damn sense, but we talk about it so fast, like it's an offer that's leaving. It's leaving your fingertips as I'm saying this, that they can't miss out. They got FOMO, the fear of missing out. And so they just throw the money. They just throw the credit card right at you. And it's a good way for people like that to get rich quick. It's, again, using fear, playing on your fear of being left out, not being rich, being the last one left at the party. Oh, my God, dude, it just drives me insane. I've seen so many people taking advantage of people because of stuff like COVID, because COVID just made us freaking even more of a lazy, materialistic society than we already were. And it drives me freaking nuts.
Yeah. You were talking about idle hands and kind of reference to the government and how they can manipulate stuff, but idle hands in reference to the entire world that's stuck at home, bored, idle. You get online, you start reading things you don't need to read and thinking things you don't need to think and getting divided on stupid things. And it's just not good for society. The risk of going out and getting sick is safer for humanity than the risk of staying in and just getting weird to the point where we destroy ourselves socially. And then ultimately it's stupid. And with the Bitcoin stuff and all that, I mean, they're selling nothing. And never make a purchase based on the fear of loss. Like, that's the dumbest, you know what I mean? That's the dumbest reason to hurry up and purchase something, because you're scared it's going to go away.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my wife's in real estate, and she always says that because she deals, you know, people are scared that the house is going to go away or whatever. And don't make a purchase based on the fear of loss. You know what I mean? Make sure you're making the right purchase. So anyway, yeah, COVID's a bitch and it's turned us into bitches. But how does that affect, like, you know, this is an automotive site or whatever. Like, how does it affect the automotive industry and the automotive aftermarket?
I think that the beatdown of COVID and the promise of money from the government is one of the main reasons why it's been so easy for the automotive industry to just become the absolute sold out shit show that it is right now. Because when people aren't working and you're not producing cars and you're not selling cars because the dealerships aren't open and people aren't working, so people aren't buying cars and everything's rare and hard to get. Like, that's not how manufacturing facilities work. So if you think of Ford as a manufacturing facility, everything is stacked against them. So something like EV comes along and they're like, hey, get you some government subsidies. You guys start making EVs. We'll pass some laws that basically tells people by 2035, all new vehicles will have to be EVs. Let's get this thing jump started. Let's start doing it. In fact, let's just ram it down people's throat. And whenever something like COVID is happening and you're not doing your other job, it's kind of easy to jump onto that train, you know, because you're like, shit, I'm not making and selling cars anyway. So now you got this whole EV thing happening. And a lot of it happened because of the situation of COVID. It was just so easy for them to slide in and do it.
Yeah. I mean, again, it goes back to me saying pre-COVID, the customer was always right. That's the way that this country works. It's goods and services for the customer. Ford, GM, Dodge, they sold cars that their customers wanted. But COVID and EV and all this kind of being thrown in at the same time, that's not the way it is anymore, is it? They're making cars that a large percentage of America does not want, definitely a considerable part, you know, and they're ignoring those people and basically saying, get on board or get left behind, you know, and a Neanderthal or whatever it is. Like, that's horseshit. The customer is right, and the customer is usually knows what's best for their life. Look at the markups, look at dealership markups. Like, that was not a thing before COVID. Like, these greedy little markup, it's an excuse because of production and inventory that, like, come on, get it together. You guys are some of the biggest companies in the world. Get it together. Like, you can get your they're dragging this out. It has changed the way they do business. Mary Barra and Jim Farley, Mary Barra is the CEO of GM, Jim Farley is the CEO of Ford, have both come out and said, we're changing our business model. We used to make a lot of cars so that the dealerships would have a lot of choices for our customers. But now we're scaling that back, and we're going to keep our production just under demand because we found out that we can get a premium for you from you guys. So why would we make more than we have to, I don't know, do right by you, the customer? No. We've got the leverage now, you know, and it's the whole attitude has changed. The smugness of the fact that they're not even hiding those kind of shitty intentions, that drives me crazy. Sorry. And I think when it comes to cars and the aftermarket and the enthusiast cars, the ones that we want, I think enthusiasts are getting so damn tired at this point of these cars coming out, but never actually coming out. No, we're going to make a, now it's the what is it, the Demon 7, what, you know, the 1200 horsepower demon that they're saying, oh, it's going to be $100,000 and it's going to make 1200 and run eights. Bullshit. It's not going to be $100,000. You'll never see one under 200,000. They're going to, you know, it's just, people are tired of the games, man. You can only cry wolf for so long before people go, fuck you. And with the Type R and the Zs and the Z06 and all of these cars that are coming out, but they're not actually coming out, I think people are freaking over it. And I think you're going to see people go to the cars that are already here. I think the price of these cars are too damn high. And I think getting the car is too damn hard. And you get to a point where you're like, I'm feeling impulsive. I want a car now. I can't get the Type R. I can't get the Z. I can't get a manual Supra. I can't get a Z06. Fuck it. I'm just going to go buy a C7. I'm just going to go buy, you know, whatever, a truck and not even care. I'm just going to go buy a GT350 that's out. I can go find them and be in a dealership today talking about it. You know, and I think they don't realize it yet, but they are effing up car culture really bad. I think that, like, the whole aftermarket is just going to shift and ignore this shit. You know, like, it's just, it's gotten to where it's not even fun. It's not fun to get bent over to get a car that excites you. You know, it's just.
By the way, this is exactly what kills fun cars, is they do exactly what you're talking about. They don't make enough of them. They put them out there. They get the insane markups. They sit on the lots for too long. Nobody buys the damn things. And then they look back and go, man, I guess that car was a failure. Sales numbers weren't high enough. But you did literally everything wrong. Let's not even mention the fact that they only go 8/10 of the way and they don't give you the car all the way that you want. I mean, like, the Supra is a perfect example of that. Phenomenal car. Automatic only transmission. How are you going to do that with a Supra? Like, anybody who's a true car enthusiast that really loved, like, the Mark III and the Mark IV Supras would not even be remotely serious about buying that for a couple of reasons. No target top, no manual transmission, and it's basically a BMW. But still, think about how many more people would have bought that car if it was priced accordingly and had what we actually wanted. But then they don't do it. The sales numbers are low. After a couple of years, they go, we got to cut this thing. And then that's how you end up with a bunch of boring white and beige and silver ovals running around on the road. That's what happens. That's how you kill fun.
Yeah. I mean, we're there. That's how they killed fun. There's a couple stragglers left, but good luck getting them. It's just, it shouldn't be difficult to buy a car that you want. Like, that shouldn't be a headache. It should be, we're not talking about Enzos here. We're talking about, you know, everyday dude sports cars or whatever. But again, the mentality of serving the customer has changed. It's more like, hey, you know, you should be worshiping us for letting you buy this car, not, hey, we value you as a customer and thank you so much for supporting, like, these passionate, cool things that we're doing, you know, like, it's the whole thing's flipped upside down. And I mean, at the end of the day, the only way you can combat this stuff is with your wallet. You don't support it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know how bad my family wants to go to Disney? We just went to Universal, but we didn't go to Disney. And that was intentional. That was a fuck you to Disney. I don't like the way you're doing business. We're going to go right to your town and then go to Universal. You know, and if enough people start voting with their wallet like that, the CEOs will either get the hint or they'll get kicked the fuck out. You know, one of the two's got to happen. Tolerating this crap is, it's, I don't get it. I don't understand how we're even remotely tolerating this shit.
We shouldn't be, and you're absolutely right. The best way to get started on this is to vote with your wallet and just absolutely do not financially support the things that you don't agree with and you don't like. If anything is subpar, I mean, think about buying a car like going to an ice cream shop. If you went in there and the only flavors they had were pistachio and, I don't know, something else terrible, you probably just wouldn't buy the ice cream, right? You probably just wouldn't buy it. You'd be like, catch you next time. I need chocolate or vanilla. But they don't have it. So you just leave. you know, yeah. And that place would eventually go out of business, and either ice cream would no longer be a thing anymore, or else somebody else would come in and be like, we've got all the chocolate you could possibly want, because that's the way capitalism works. But no one seems to be stepping up and pulling their balls out and doing the right thing right now. Going back to what you were talking about before, I miss the days when engineers designed cool shit because it was innovative and it was cool. And they were just trying to make everything better. Now it's just about not necessarily better. It's about safety and efficiency. And it's coming up with, it's creating some of the worst products I've ever seen in my life.
There's two things that we're dealing with right now. It's safety and it's the environment. And those two things have been leveraged and they've used it to lie to people. And it's just eating everybody's fucking brains. It's turned them into absolute zombie idiots. And it's controlling the market. And you're absolutely right. Like that, I'm not discarding safety or the environment. I'm saying they're lying to you. They're trying to sell you something. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just don't be an idiot, man. They're blowing this thing out of proportion so they can suck their own ass or whatever they're doing, and they can try and sell this stuff to idiots. It's like you're absolutely right. Like, companies should be innovative. I don't know if they should. It's just, at least when we were kids, the innovation was coming from a place of excitement and fun. That's what they wanted to create, and that's what people wanted to buy. And somehow they've fucking drugged us all into thinking that everything has to be safe and good for the environment. Again, it should absolutely be a consideration, but I get it's such a weird place that they can make absolute shit. They can make it boring. They can make it monotonous. They can make it overpriced, and they can make it with a short lifespan or shelf life. It'll be obsolete fast. But if they can sell you on the fact that it's safe or that it's good for the environment, then somehow that's what's driving the entire market. Again, just like people need to stop being so scared about Corona, stop being so freaking scared about everything. Like, all new cars are pretty safe. You know what I mean? They've gotten this figured out. Like, they're losing their marbles, and it will never stop. Hang on. if the environment is your leverage, it'll never stop. Okay, EVs, I mean, that's bad for the environment too. The production methods are awful and they're toxic as fuck when they get made. So maybe we shouldn't have cars. We should just walk everywhere. Okay, well, you better not be walking on a pair of Nikes or shoes, because those things use rubber and they're made in sweatshops overseas and all this stuff. There's no end to the environment. Your existence on this planet is bad for the environment. You know what I mean? You interact with the environment and everything you do. And so it's a witch hunt. It's a freaking witch hunt, and it will never end if it's safety or the environment. And right now they got us by the balls, because everything is safety, for your safety or for the environment, and it's paralyzed us. Like, that you can't argue that. You know what I mean? Like, it's just paralyzing. It's paralyzed the automotive industry and many, and it'll just go down the line. What is next?
I 100% agree. And one of the things that upsets me the most is that the automotive industry has basically just been ripped from the hands of the people who are true automotive professionals and knowledgeable people. And it's literally just been given to the bureaucrats. And the automotive aftermarket industry is just getting run the hell over and can't seem to, they don't even know which way is up right now. They're basically just destined to just lay back and say, take me, I guess we're done here. And we'll just kind of sigh, quietly go away in the next couple of years. It is time for everybody. We got to get back to that American spirit, that blue collar, roll your sleeves up, and let's go get some goddamn work done. All you young bucks out there listening, I don't know if you guys know this, but you see all these amazing automotive aftermarket companies out there. And a lot of you guys probably think that they just popped up out of nowhere because somebody had a great idea one time and they just started making parts. No, not at all. You want to know how most of these companies started? just testing shit, just testing theories at the racetrack. A lot of these companies were started by guys and girls who were just tuners. Well, no matter what kind of car they had, they were just taking their vehicle to the track and trying new things, making little makeshift parts, different hoses here and there. Let's just try, let's machine something, put something together, different tire sizes, lightweight, whatever. They were just trying things. And whenever something worked, they said, damn, that worked. Let's perfect it. Oh my God, that works so well. Somebody else, my buddy Bob, wants me to do it for his car. And then I got to do it for Troy's car. And then Rebecca's. And then boom, next thing you know, we've made a company out of it. That's how it happened, though, is somebody going out there with a lot of heart and a lot of soul and a little bit of knowledge and the will and determination to just go and try things and bash their head against the wall until they freaking get it right. And then bam, you got a company and you have an amazing story and you had an awesome adventure in the process. That's not happening anymore. Everybody just wants to sit behind their computer and come up with the next big idea, do a little bit of trading, and boom, we're rich. That's not real life.
That what you're describing is innovation, natural innovation in a free country. But what happens in the automotive industry when you have, you know, the government's boot around your freaking neck, you can't do that stuff. The government is making it impossible to go out to a track day, have fun, and innovate things and create a business around it, doing which it's the American dream. You know what I mean? Like, they're making it hard to go after that because of the environment or whatever it is. They're killing the American dream. They're killing innovation in America. So what you get are what the people innovating things that are green, that are often not, that they know they can go get government grants if they say the right things. And it's twisting real natural innovation by the people, for the people, into schemes. You know what I mean? And it's absolute horseshit. The innovation in this automotive aftermarket is dying out because people don't want to take the fucking risk because it's going to get shut down by our government. Now, what kind of freedom is that?
Yeah, man. Can't agree more. I mean, you know how I feel about this subject. It's just, I feel like we were in an uphill battle and now we've lost. And it's just kind of like time to lay down and die. I wish that weren't the truth, but it seems like no one else in our industry, except for me and you, wants to pipe up and talk about this. And the fact is, what power do we have now? Like this is our platform and that's cool. And we can talk to our audience and kind of build a little bit of a, you know, makeshift army or whatever. But what are we going to do about it? I don't have any friends in politics. I don't have millions of dollars to go throw around here and play with these big boys. The fact is, the industry is going to do what the industry is going to do. And the only people that seem to be even trying to protect this industry, trying, is SEMA. And they're just not doing a phenomenal job. Let's be honest about that. So no one's talking for us, man. No one's helping. And we are absolutely going to get freaking wiped out unless the next crop, the young people who are passionate about this shit, decide to freaking roll up their sleeves, zip up their man suit, and do something about this shit. If you like this, if you love this life that we have and this freedom that we have to modify and play with cars and have fun and be freaking cool and have friends, you better go damn fight for it because it's the only way we're going to keep it.
Yeah. SEMA does a lot of things well, but I think it's pretty clear that they're not the ones to lead this fight. They're just not. They're not doing it. It's like you said, this fight has to come from the citizens, from the enthusiasts, and be so loud that the corporations have to listen to it, that the Fords and the GMs ultimately have to go to the government and say, I can't play ball with this. You know, this is not what our customers want. You're going to bail us out again because we're going to fail because our customers don't want. You're pushing something. You, the government, are out of touch with the people, you know, and right now the people are disorganized. They don't. Our news is all fake. It's all bullshit. It's easy to manipulate people, even smart people, especially dumb people, with different news and things like that. And so the people, the citizens, are at a real disadvantage. We're unorganized. They're very organized. And it's bigger than cars. Like, it's so much bigger than cars. Cars are an example, and car culture is an example of how this shift is destroying us. But like, man, it's destroying the mentality of what could be. Like I said, it's the American dream. And you start talking about stuff like that, and it sounds dramatic and everything, but like, that's always been alive until now. And it is in question. People are starting to lose that. Hell yeah, anything's possible. We can, you know, like, you're starting to be like, you know, just obey and fall in line. And that's not how this is supposed to be. Even if you hate cars and you love EVs, is that how you want your kids to live in the world and see the world? Like, is that, do you want to put ceilings on them because of their safety and the environment? Like, come on. At some point, we have to realize that this is a crock of shit.
It's a really good point, because growing up, I truly believed my parents when they said, Mike, when you grow up, you can be anything that you want to be.
They believed it. They believed it when they told it.
They
Do you believe it now when you tell your kid that? Like, there has been a change.
Nah, man. I just look at my kids and I say, damn, man, I hope that I somehow make it big enough in my lifetime to where I can pass down to you, so that life is easier on you. And I know that's not the greatest thing to say in the world as a parent, but I just see, I mean, even right now, like, my boys are young, but I just see life being a lot harder on them than it was on me. The automation is going to take jobs. Automation is going to steal a lot of jobs, guys. And the fun from life, that visceral experience of just being out there and experiencing and touching and feeling and just all the senses, the crazy shit me and you used to get into and just have these amazing stories that live on for decades. Like, that stuff just doesn't happen anymore, man. People just sit behind their screen and that is their life. They sit there and they watch other people live. They watch other people play video games, other kids open toys. I'm so sad watching my boys, and I try to limit most of their technology, but it inevitably, when it happens, I see the stuff that they're drawn to and I'm like, that's such bullshit. Cooper, put that down. That's such bullshit. Go get your baseball glove.
Here's the thing, like, the automation and the devices and the screens and the apps and the whatever, Apple Pays and all that, like, that's their reality. And if me and you and people listen to this that are of adult fighting age right now, if we don't instill that into them, and if we don't make them realize what the real world is, that'll be lost. That'll be lost in a couple of generations. We'll be gone. You guys listening will be gone. And all they will know is a fucking digital simulated world. Like, that's what I mean. This is bigger than cars. It is absolutely, humanity's never been at a place like this, dude. It is, this shit is moving so fast with these freaking AI and robots and all this shit that I don't understand. We have the ability to freaking not make it out of this century. You know what I mean? Like, for hundreds of thousands of years, humans didn't have the ability to destroy themselves. It wasn't in their hands. For the last 120 years, we've had it. And man, it's getting scary now. And nobody thinks, you know, that can't happen. The fuck it can't. Like, we're getting in dangerous waters.
Yeah, 100% agree. But every once in a while, I do see like a news article or something that makes me think that, oh, maybe we are making a few correct decisions. I just saw one yesterday that was all about how what's Mark Zuckerberg doing with this metaverse and what has happened. You know, a couple of years ago, I was really worried about that. I thought it was going to be like that freaking movie Ready Player One, where you literally, you know, your kids wake up and they throw on their little VR headset and they play video games all day, or else they digitally go to school with their little VR headsets and we put the things on and we go to quote unquote work. You know, you sit there and type on a keyboard that's not really there and you send emails that aren't really there, and everything is just like make-believe. It's all pretend. I was really worried about something like that happen. So I was really relieved to hear that metaverse is not doing well. And it's just kind of an empty hellhole that nothing is there. So Zuck, sorry you sunk a bunch of money into that, but I'm really glad it didn't work out. Hopefully you abandoned that project, because it was not good for humanity.
I mean, I think the answer to this thing, the only way to fight it is human interaction, man. We're everybody's so separated and divided right now. online or in the news or, you know, but like in reality, that's not the reality. So like, you need to get out there more, you know, socialize more. And then you realize that all this bullshit is actually bullshit and isn't that attractive. But when you're so stuck in your little 13-inch world right here on your screen, that becomes your reality, man. It becomes apparently more appealing to you. I don't know. I don't know. And I know this podcast has gone deep, but I feel like it's been all right.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, man. Me and my wife, every year around her birthday, we take a trip to a cold place to go do some snowboarding and just have some fun. And this year we decided to go to Jackson Hole, Wyoming. I don't know if anybody here has ever been there. I definitely recommend it. It's an amazing place, but it is off the grid. There's not much internet connection there. And we went during the snowy season, so there really weren't a bunch of people. Honestly, we kind of had the town to ourselves. Yeah. And it was so nice to just kind of unplug and not be like, I didn't even want to look at my phone. I kind of just left it in the room most of the time, other than just taking some pictures of some amazing scenery while we were there. But anybody out there who's listening to this, who feels like, you know, think about it. Do I spend too much time on my phone or at work or in front of a computer or just too much digital time and not enough time living? Go find your Jackson Hole, man. Go find just a cool place you've never been to before that has amazing landscapes. Go with a person you care about. And just have fun. Like, don't.
You don't even have to. It doesn't have to be Jackson Hole or Hawaii or anything like that, dude. Like, for me, that is mountain bikes. You know what I mean? Like, it just go outside. Jesus. Like, you know what I mean? Instead of buying whatever the hell stupid shit VR thing you're going to buy, go buy a bike and go ride it and go outside and you'll be amazed. It's just the perspective that that time gives you, not to mention exercise. Go get a damn jet ski, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that stuff changes everything. It's just go outside. Damn, that's the whole thing. Just go outside and live in the real world, and you'll actually realize that some things are pretty rad and that there's not a screen attached to them.
So funny, man. As soon as we got back, you know, we flew into Hartsfield, Jackson, Atlanta. And as soon as we get out of the airport, we go and immediately get cut off by some idiot who can't drive and then get stuck in traffic. And I start getting just pissed that my wife is looking at me like, oh, God, Mike, calm down. And I immediately, like, my only thought was, cities are stupid. Yeah. Cities are a bad clusterfuck of an idea.
Yeah. We need to do away with it. Cities are fun when you're young and stupid. When you get to be like middle age, 30s and 40s, like, they are a weight on your damn shoulders that you just cannot get rid of, dude. They are, you know what I mean? Like, they're awful. It's like you said, you go out west or out somewhere where nobody is, and it is a different freaking feeling. I think a lot of people don't realize that. The heaviness, the stress, the distaste, the anger, a lot of that comes from cities, from being too stuck. You know, like, there's just too many people, too many irritations. You can't move. It's just, you're an animal stuck in a damn cage, dude.
Yeah. That's why we're so divided, because we're too damn close to each other.
Yeah, we're just pissed off. We're just fucking pissed off. And then you got the news and the government just poking at us. Hey, you know why you're pissed off? It's those guys. It's not your fault. Them. You know, like, you mad at your situation? It's them. Yeah, it's just, it's stupid, man. Anyway, thanks for listening. Hope we didn't depress you too much. Is there a light at the end of this tunnel? Maybe not. Yeah.
Sure, man. It's not so much a light at the end of the tunnel. It's more of a poke that you guys need to get your shit together and start working harder. And
that's what I mean. Like, if it's cars, go work on your damn car. You know, if it's bikes, go ride a damn bike. You know, like, just find your outlet, whatever that is that gives you peace. And do that and make it, do it enough to where it becomes a part of you and it's bigger than all this stuff fighting you. You know what I mean? So that you can overcome that shit, so that you can keep your perspective and keep your true north, so to speak, so that when the government and pandemics and all this stuff throws this shit at you, you don't succumb to it.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, sometimes it's like you said, I feel like we're the only ones. And that makes us question ourselves a lot. Man, are we saying the right things? Yes. It's not my fault we're the only ones saying it. Or at least I'm sure there's other people saying it too, and they're not getting heard either because we're not saying what should be said right now. We're not saying what the algorithm's like. You know what I mean? But damn it. Yeah. I guess that's my advice, man. Find something that you enjoy, whatever that is, and do it enough to where it builds you up stronger than whatever the hell's trying to tear you down.
Yeah. So I guess to put a neat little bow on this thing, I would just say COVID sucked, but it's over. Get the hell back to work. Get back to being happy again. Get off your phone. Get off your computer. Go and do physical things and have fun.
Yep. All right. Thanks for listening. If you stumbled on this somewhere and you're not familiar with us, we're S3 Magazine. We have an app. It's free. It's called S3 Magazine. It's got a lot of this like-minded stuff in it. Anything from awesome cars to give you inspiration to news that we, you know, news in the automotive industry and things of that nature. Thank you for listening this far. Unless you got anything else to say, we're out.
We're out.
We're out.